You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking American League East with MLB.com's five AL East beat reporters. We'll be talking about the Matt Wieters situation with the Orioles. We'll be talking about Didi Gregorius and Jacoby Ellsbury when we talk Yankees. When we talk Red Sox, we'll be looking at a variety of different health updates. The same when we talk about Toronto Blue Jays, certainly some health issues to deal with there. And when we talk Rays, we'll be taking a look at the rotation, the front, and the back. Thanks, everybody, for listening to MLB.com Extras. Talking Baltimore Orioles with MLB.com's Orioles beat reporter, Brittany Giroli. But when we talked a week ago, things were just starting to break about the Matt Wieters situation. It is clearly much worse news than it was a week or two ago. It doesn't seem like it's catastrophic yet, but it's certainly not good. Where exactly is he? What's going on with that? What's the situation?
Well, he's still shut down from actually throwing in a game, being in a game. He's not even DHing, which is something that is a little troubling because originally they had said he can return to games. We want him to swing the bat. Buck Showalter kind of decided, hey, we're going to take a step back. We're going to let everything calm down here before he gets back into the games. And this has been about a week, as you mentioned. So it's a case where they're just evaluating him day by day. It seems like it's going to be a little bit of a slower process than everybody had hoped. Obviously going to start the season on the disabled list and not be ready for opening day, which is a little bit of a letdown for the Orioles, for Wieters. They were counting on him so heavily. But the case now becomes, when will he be ready? Will it be in April? Will it be in May? Will they be able to catch him day games after night games? How is that whole thing going to work? And a lot of that's still yet to be determined. So it's really something that keeps evolving, definitely something to monitor. But when it comes to Matt Wieters right now, they're taking things very, very cautiously.
Is it now the case that if he's not catching, he's not going to be on the roster?
Right. Yes, they can't afford to have a DH only. And also, they want him to heal fully. And, you know, as much as they say that the hitting doesn't affect the elbow, doesn't bother him, it's still, to some extent, you're still using the elbow. You're still using both hands. He's a switch hitter. And I think they would prefer for him to be a full-time player. Now, consider his agent is Scott Morris, and he's in the final year under team control. And it's going to be a little bit of a tug of war because Boris certainly wants his client out there, wants him DHing. But right now, the Orioles are resisting that.
We have talked about this some, but in case it has changed or what they've seen over spring, what is the backup plan? What do they do at catcher?
Well, Caleb Joseph is probably going to be the starter, and he really established himself a great story about an older minor leaguer who really turned it around defensively. He was a guy who they didn't think organizationally could catch at all as little as 2 years ago, and really credit to Caleb Joseph, the job he's done. He's become their number one guy behind Matt Wieters, and when you look in camp, they want to emphasize defense. So some of the guys they have struggled defensively. J.P. Arencibia's got a bunch of pass balls. Steve Clevenger the other day struggled with the Cardinals, who tried to run about eight times on him. And so I think Ryan Lavardway, even though his arm is a little questionable at times, may be the guy that they go to. One of their prospects, Brian Ward, they really like defensively, but he's already at minor league camp, doesn't have a lot of experience. You kind of run the risk of having two guys with Caleb Joseph and Brian Ward who are young, don't have that big league track record. I think they'd prefer to go with a guy who's got a little bit more experience. I think Lavarnway right now is how it looks to be. They could also go out and get a guy. I mean, you look across the dugout today and Navarro and what has to be done there. He's a legitimate guy who could catch. So they could pull a move. They traded for Nick Hundley last year when Wieters went down, and they could do something like that again.
Could you see, and it's interesting, Navarro's an interesting name, could you see them going after the kind of guy who could be an everyday guy slash backup if it happens, a kind of covers you in case this is worse than expected, but also it's not a problem if you move him back off of starting?
Yeah, I think he's a great fit for them. And, you know, obviously something needs to be done with where he is. There's really just not a spot for him. So he seems to be one of the guys who is available and who can catch. And there's not a whole lot of them right now. Early on in camp and where you are. I mean, maybe later on in the season, but it just seems like there's not a whole lot of guys available. Navarro's a name that jumps out to me that is available, that the Orioles certainly have interest in, and that could really help them, as you mentioned, even when Wieters comes back. So something to keep an eye on.
The other side, as they look at what you might see moving out, a lot of talk that the Orioles might be looking to clear some space in their bullpen one way or another. What is their thinking? It's been such a strong suit of the club in recent years. What is their thinking as they maybe look to move a reliever or two?
Well, they need options. And right now, they don't have a whole lot of optionable pieces. And that's how they've been able to function, is by making transactions every day and having all these moves, keeping guys fresh. That's what's enabled Showalter to keep that bullpen operating at a high level. They haven't had guys out of that bullpen get injured under him. They haven't had these catastrophic arm injuries, these overuse issues with any of those guys since Buck took over. It's something he meticulously charts and keeps track of. And because they don't have those guys with options, they really run the risk of losing all these guys when they try to send them through waivers. So Ryan Mattis is a guy who they've shopped this spring. Ryan Webb is another guy. Webb doesn't really project to make the team. Mattis, of course, has a spot on the team if he's not traded. But he's a guy who holds a lot of value. And there are a lot of scouts here watching him today. And he's allowed one earned run over 11 and one-third spring innings. He could potentially be a starter again for some clubs, depending on how you look at him. So the real issue with him is the price tag. He's going to make over $3 million this year. So I think if you're going to bite on him, you have to consider him a little bit more than a lefty specialist.
Yeah, and Mattis is a guy who's really emerged as, has promised to be, and has really, to some extent, emerged as a really, really good lefty reliever. I'm a guy with the ability to be top tier. Even as much as they need this flexibility, how tough would it be to part with a guy who's more than just the seventh or eighth reliever, a depth guy?
It would be really tough. And, you know, they really don't have anybody waiting in the wings down in the minor leagues where you would say, oh, this guy could take over for Brian Mattis. He's dominant against lefties. They don't have that piece. Now, whether they try and function without that piece, if they trade Brian Mattis, you would just have to wait and see. But it would allow them the flexibility that they lack right now. But as you mentioned, it's a give and take. It's a big hole because he's so good late innings. He's just masterful on some of these left-handed hitters. And there's a lot of them in the American League East that can do damage in the late innings.
The one bit of pretty good news here recently is Ubaldo Jimenez seems to be showing some real promise. It's March. He's inconsistent. But with that said, you're looking for any signs of life, and it definitely seems like there's at least signs of life here.
You are, and yesterday he pitched his best Grapefruit League start by far, five scoreless innings, really starting to consistently put together that new delivery that he's been working on since really September of last year, simplifying things, eliminating that move to go over his head, and it looks like he's not thinking about it anymore, which is huge. And any kind of confidence they can get going for Ubaldo is going to be something that the Orioles are going to look at, that they can take as a huge positive coming out of this camp, because barring injury or just a totally complete collapse by Ubaldo, he's going to be in that rotation. They have to give him another shot. They committed three more years to him, a substantial amount of money. They have to see what he has. So him building on each outing, getting a little bit better each time through, helps lend itself to a little more confidence. Of course, it creates competition in terms of what do you do with a Kevin Gausman or a Miguel Gonzalez? What is the fallout for having Ubaldo in that rotation, which creates a whole nother set of questions. But for the Orioles, having six guys pitching well and healthy is a good thing.
What is the most likely sort of second step there? Is it Gausman to the bullpen?
You know, I don't know. You know, it seems to go in waves back and forth in terms of how they attempt to deal with this whole situation here. I don't think they expected Ubaldo to continue to progress like he has this spring. The issue with putting Kevin Gausman in the bullpen, of course, is does it stunt his growth? Is he able to be a starter option for you if another starter gets hurt or goes through a lull? Now, sending Gausman down, I think, is something they don't want to do, because manager Buck Showalter knows it sends a bad vibe to the guys in the clubhouse, guys like J.J. Hardy and Adam Jones, and guys that want to win and want to win now, that know how things are done. And I think that they realize sending Gausman down is something that could really impact this team at the big league level as well. So they're going to be very careful with that. It's interesting, though, because they don't need five starters for most of that first month of April. So do they put Gonzalez and Gausman in the bullpen? Do they have a guy kind of designated as long relief who really just kind of stays sharp as a just-in-case type of guy? Their schedule is so weird that first month of the season that they don't need five starters. They certainly don't need six. So someone's going to be the odd man out here. And the guy who hasn't pitched all that well has been right-hander Bud Norris, who you can't send down. He's out of options. So barring injury, they've got some really tough decisions to make the last week or so of camp.
All right. Well, Brittany Droy, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras.
Talking New York Yankees with MLB.com's Yankees beat reporter Brian Hoke. Brian, if this team's going to score enough runs to be a serious contender, one guy that really has to be a part of that is Jacoby Ellsbury. What's the latest with his health, and how's he coming along?
The Yankees have said from the beginning that they're pretty confident that Ellsbury's going to be there for opening day. They termed it a very mild oblique strain, is the way that Joe Girardi put it. And I think that if it was a regular season, you would have seen him in games much quicker than that. Because they have the opportunity to rest him, there's really no hurry. So he's going to probably get into a minor league game on Tuesday. And if he can play by March 31, Girardi has said he has no question about Ellsbury being ready for opening day. So you'll probably see him in a minor league game. After that, he might even get in a few more Grapefruit League games, and he should be ready to go April 6th.
I know you haven't been around him long, but is it your understanding that he is the kind of guy who isn't one of those who needs weeks and weeks of at-bats to be in game shape?
No, and one of the things he was saying was that he was feeling pretty good where he was before the injury. And this is something he went through last year, too, his first year with the Yankees. He missed the last couple weeks of spring training with a calf injury, played in a couple minor league games, never got back in a Grapefruit League game, but he was ready to go when the bell rung on whenever opening day was.
Another guy who needs to be a big part of a Yankee team if they're good is Didi Gregorius. And it's interesting because it's considering his position, there hasn't been a lot of talk about him. I think that probably speaks more about the rest of everything that goes into being the Yankees. But how has he handled this? What's he look like, both performance-wise, but just as far as kind of carrying himself in a challenging position?
I'll tell you what, I have been very impressed by watching him, the way he has played defensively. It's been fun. You know, you heard the things coming into the season about how he was a plus-rated defensive shortstop and he was going to make a difference and save a lot of runs at shortstop. But just seeing him, I've been most impressed with his arm. I maybe it's because I've been conditioned to watch Jeter in the last years of his career. And this is not to bag on Jeter at all, but this is a in-his-prime defensive shortstop with a hose. And I think fans are going to be really impressed to see the way he goes into the hole, the way he fires across, and the balls he gets to this year. He's going to save the Yankees a lot of runs there. So it seems, you know, Mark Teixeira has said he's one of the best defensive shortstops that he's seen. A-Rod has been very complimentary as well. So these are two guys who have been around the game for quite a while, and they know what they're talking about.
It's interesting. I always noticed that center and shortstop were two positions where you didn't really notice what you weren't seeing until somebody stepped in and did it, and you realized, oh, that's what it's all about. On the offensive side, there also he's maybe not a star hitter in the making, but I think there's always been some notion this guy was going to hit, that he would not be a no-hit off-field guy. Much harder to read based on 20 or 30 or 40 at-bats, but what have you seen from him at the plate?
I think the most encouraging thing for the Yankees is that he's starting to hit left-handed pitching a little bit, which is something he did not do a whole lot of in Arizona. Jeff Pentland, the hitting coach, has been working on him, trying to get him to kind of limit the movement in the box and be shorter to the ball. And so far, he's seeing some results from that. You know, Eric Chavez, who obviously played with Gregorius in Arizona and is now with Brian Cashman as a special assistant, he said that he could see a day when Gregorius hits about 260, 270 with, you know, 12 to 15 homers in the big leagues. I mean, I think that's probably a ceiling. He'll probably come in below that, but you know, Yankee Stadium should help him a little bit, too. So I think that those numbers are not completely out of reach. He certainly has the athletic ability. It's just a matter of seeing if the Yankees can get that out of him.
What are they doing? Because this is something you wrote about earlier in the spring. What are they doing? I mean, aside from it, just at bats, what can you do to help something like a young left-handed hitter getting stronger against left-handed pitching?
Yeah, I mean, I know you said aside from at-bats, but I think that really is the most important thing. He needs to get those reps. If you look at his stats when he was with Arizona, they didn't really let him face left-handed pitching a whole lot. And one of the things that Joe Girardi has said is it's easy for a young player to get typecast early in his career. He has a little bit of struggle early in his career. They say, all right, well, this guy can't do it. Or maybe they just have somebody who can do it, and then you don't need to give those at-bats to Gregorius. Well, in the Yankees' case, you know, they have Brendan Ryan, but he hasn't played a whole lot this spring. So I think that at this point, you're going into the season thinking Gregorius is probably going to be the everyday guy against right-handers and left-handers. And maybe if you have to work Brendan Ryan back in there in a platoon, you do. But I think if you can go with Gregorius and he can be your number one guy, you do that.
Piece of news came out of camp this week that was not particularly expected, and it's still not entirely official as I understand it, but apparently, as you might figure, Masahiro Tanaka is the opening day starter. Was there any drama or anything to that, or was that more or less a foregone conclusion?
I think it was a formality at this point, especially when you knew that Sabathia was coming in and he was going to be behind and they were going to take it very slow with him. There was really no reason to amp him up and rush him for opening day. Just to have him go for a seventh straight opening day. I think that's more of a ceremonial title, and really, Sabathia said he was fine with it. His focus is just being ready to take the ball every fifth day. And so I think that if you look at this rotation up and down, I guess you can make a case of Michael Pineda, but I think you have to say Masahiro Tanaka is their ace. He is their number one pitcher, and you know, if he's healthy, and if, especially if he's the guy that he was the first 16, 17 starts of last year, he should have the ball on opening day. So it looks like that's what's lined up. They're always subject to change. Something catastrophic could happen, but that is clearly the Yankees' plan. They've lined him up that way, and so he should be on the mound April 6th against Toronto.
And at the back of the rotation, we just watched Adam Warren pitch. What have you seen from him, and is that set? Is that done? Is that all but done?
It's as close as it could be to being 100%. You know, there was a game a year or two ago where Joe Girardi didn't want to give out a fifth a probable starter, and we were saying, well, why not? And he said, well, what if he gets hit by a bus? And so I don't expect Adam Warren to get hit by any buses. I think he will be the Yankees' fifth starter. He has clearly won the job. He's earned it. I've seen a lot of what you saw last year from him out of the bullpen. I think 4 out of his 5 months were very good. And he did have that one blip there where he wasn't great. But they've always seen him as a starting pitcher at some point in the future. His stuff played up a little bit more in the bullpen. But one thing the Yankees have liked, even when he did go to the bullpen, he remained a four-pitch guy. And I think that should help him come back to the rotation, because none of those things will have been too much in the dresser drawer, so to speak. He's kept them all sharp, and so he should have his full repertoire, and I think he's shown he can get big league hitters out.
All right, well, Brian Hoke, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras.
Talking Toronto Blue Jays with MLB.com's Blue Jays beat reporter, Gregor Chisholm. Gregor, in a spring of just one hit after another, it seems like one of the most important guys is finally headed the right direction. What's the status of Edwin Encarnacion, and is he looking like he might be able to be there for opening day?
Yeah, it does, and that's one of the most important developments of camp so far, is that, you know, after a spring of injuries, there's finally some good news on this front, and it's happening right at the right time. You know, Encarnacion got into a minor league game this week, looked pretty good at the plate. You know, with an extra base hit, probably could have been a triple even, but he decided to kind of lay up for a double because he didn't want to push things too much. But, you know, that's a really encouraging sign, and it's going to remain to be seen how much he's going to be able to play at first base compared to DH. They're going to have to keep an eye on that probably for most of the year. But the fact that he's in the box right now, facing live hitting, and still has, you know, almost 2 weeks to get ready for the season, is a really strong sign for this team, because he's obviously a really big part of that lineup.
What kind of worry is it, and what kind of challenge is it making sure that he gets the at-bats he needs without pushing too hard and risking some sort of relapse?
Yeah, and he's someone who he talks about timing at the plate even more so than most hitters, and it's important to every guy, but he's someone who, you know, last season, he struggled for it throughout the month of April. He had a really slow start and then came on like fire in May and really kind of turned things around. And all of that goes back to his timing and feel in the box. So he's going to need to get those at-bats. I think they're still going to give him, you know, the occasional day off. They're not going to throw him out there every day this spring just so he doesn't, you know, do anything to hurt that back again. I think they're going to keep him away from the field just for a little bit. But, you know, he says he usually needs about probably another 30 at-bats to get ready for the season. He might not quite get to that number over the next week and a half, but he should be able to get up, you know, closer to 20 if he gets in a decent number of games here over the next little stretch. So he should be okay, but it's probably going to be something to monitor even during that first week or two of the season to see just how he's looking at the plate.
Another key guy who the news seems to be encouraging is Michael Saunders. We've talked about him some and how well that's gone. What's his timetable looking like right now?
Opening day still a bit of a question mark, but if he's not ready for opening day, it really seems like he'll be ready for the home opener a week later, which is a really encouraging sign. I mean, this is someone earlier in the spring we were talking about wouldn't be back until the All-Star break. Obviously, with the procedure he had to remove some of the meniscus instead of repairing it, he's able to come back a lot quicker. But a big thing for him is also seeing that repetition at the plate. I mean, he's someone now who's been able to play in minor league games for about a week, and he's not running. He's only hitting. So if he hits a double, he's still walking back to the dugout afterwards. He hit a home run earlier this week and watched it sail over the fence and then just walk back to the dugout right afterwards. So they're not taking any risks with him in the field or on the base pass. But those are type of things that will come along pretty quickly. The things that takes an awful lot longer for him is obviously seeing that live pitch and getting his timing down at the plate. And at least he's able to do that before he gets clearance to kind of up the other baseball activities.
What is the confidence level that once he's back, he'll be the guy they expected they were getting?
I think there's a lot of confidence there, and he's really a big part of this lineup because he's probably going to hit number six. He's something the Blue Jays don't have a lot of, which is some power from the left side. I mean, everybody knows what they've got from the right side with Donaldson and Encarnacion and Batista, Russell Martin, guys like that. But Saunders gives them a bit of a different look out there. And, you know, he's someone who I've always kind of thought was a little bit of an underrated ball player as well in Seattle. And, you know, he had a little bit of trouble last year staying healthy. But, you know, the hope is he's going to be able to put that behind him early on in the season and provide the Blue Jays with some production that they're really going to need, because after losing Melky Cabrera last year, they needed a guy to come in and replace that. Everyone within the organization kind of thinks he's a bit of an underrated piece for this lineup.
The second base situation is really interesting because there's been some bad injury news, but in the wake of that, some guys have stepped up. I mean, it seems like maybe this is not as bad a situation as they might have feared.
Yeah, and that's something this organization has really, you look at the last couple of years, this is a team that's always dealt with injuries, but they haven't necessarily had the depth to overcome that. This year, I think you're seeing a little bit of a different story. You know, when you had Stroman go down, you're able to replace him with Aaron Sanchez. At second base, you had Meister Asturias go down. He looked like the front runner. You had Ramon Santiago go down with a broken collarbone. He initially looked like he was going to be the backup infielder. But what it's done is it's really given Devin Travis an opportunity to shine. And I think a lot of people originally thought that it was going to be, you know, 2-3 months maybe before the Blue Jays realistically gave him a shot at the big league level. So he came in kind of camp under the radar. But, you know, now after these injuries, he's really kind of looking like the favorite in that race. And he's done it with his play. You can only read so much in his spring training stats. But he's been everything that was advertised coming over from Detroit. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Blue Jays kind of push his timeline up a little bit and give him a chance on opening day.
At the closer spot, it became pretty clear what was going to happen there, but Bryce Cecil has officially been named the guy. How do you think that's going to work out, and is there any concern about his health? He's dealt with some stuff.
Yeah, there was concern, I think, for the most part, kind of similar to Encarnacion and Saunders. He's rounding into form at the right time. He's not going to have a lot of innings under his belt. He may not be able to pitch on back-to-back days before the start of the regular season, which is going to be a little bit of a concern. He just may run out of time before he can do that. But he's back throwing. He's been in a couple minor league games right now. Should be able to get into some big league games within the next week, which should put him on pace to start the season without any kind of complications. And really, he was kind of the obvious choice. I think there was an initial uncertainty, I guess, because of Aaron Sanchez's role, but to me, he was kind of the clear-cut candidate all along. He's the most veteran guy down there. He does have a handful of saves throughout his career. He was a closer in college. To me, it makes sense to have him down there while keeping, you know, the right side with Steve Delabar, Miguel Castro, guys like that. Those are the arms that you're going to need in middle relief because they don't have a lot of depth on there, so they really need to maximize those innings. I think Cecil gives you a little bit more of a proven shot and kind of lengthens out that bullpen a little bit.
What's plan B if there is a setback, if he's not ready as quickly as possible, or even if just there are days when early in the season he's not available?
It's going to be a problem because the depth is the issue there. I mean, probably Aaron Loop would maybe be a backup guy. A lot of people really want to see, a lot of the fan base really wants to see Miguel Castro get a shot, but to me it's just way too early for that. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's 20 years old, never pitched above Class A, and while he's looked absolutely, you know, untouchable this spring with upper 90s velocity and a really, really nasty changeup, you don't know how he's going to react after he fails, and that's something we're not going to be able to see until the first few weeks of the season and how he deals with that adversity. I think it'd be better to kind of have him deal with that in a setup role, middle relief kind of role, as opposed to being the guy out there in the ninth inning, potentially risking blowing a game and then seeing what it does to his confidence. I'd bring him along a little bit slower, and he's going to get some high leverage innings, but I wouldn't give it to him in the ninth.
All right, well, Gregor Chisholm, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Tampa Bay Rays with MLB.com's Rays beat reporter, Bill Chastain. Bill, it was not a surprise, but nonetheless, they formally named Chris Archer the opening day starter. Was there any drama there? Was there any? Is that in any way even slightly unexpected?
Not in the least. In fact, it was funny because Kevin Cash said he was not going to name an opening day starter until Buck named his, or Buck Showalter, that is. And so today he said, well, Buck's already named his opening day starter, so we could do it. But in fact, that was not true. He had not named his opening day starter. But everybody figured Archer would be the guy. And you know, he's got number one stuff. And you know, once Cobb went down, you know, he was going to be the guy.
What are your expectations of Archer this year? Because as you know, his upside is enormous. And he started a little slow last year, came on really strong late in the year. I mean, you think he can be that kind of guy this year?
Well, what jumps out to you always is the stuff. But he seems to be maturing well on the mound. He's very studious off the mound. So I think some of that, you know, in fact, one of the things he did in the offseason when talking with Kevin Cash was he wanted to know what was going on with Kluber. You know, of course, Cash was in the bullpen for the Indians last year. So he wanted to know what was clicking for Kluber. What made him become, you know, the winner he was. And that's kind of the stuff that he incorporates. So, you know, you combine that that working mentality with the stuff he has, and, you know, this guy could be something special.
How is the rotation as a whole shaping up as we get closer to opening day?
Well, right now I would expect, you know, definitely you're going to have Archer at one, Odorizzi at two, and it looks like it's going to be Nathan Karnes at three. There's still, you know, a little competition for four, but, you know, Matt Andrees, Mike Montgomery, Emmett Everett Tiefert, but it looks like they'll probably start the season with four in the rotation and take advantage of the off days to kind of get them through midway through April. And then who knows, the picture might be looking a little clearer. You know, maybe Cobb or Smiley's going to be closer to being back. Alex Colomay will probably be back before most of those guys, you know, in my mind, because he was out with pneumonia and he says he feels strong. So, you know, they're going to have to tread water there a little bit, but I think they could be in pretty good shape, particularly since I don't think the division is really that strong this year.
How are Cobb and Smiley progressing? Because obviously those are two critical guys for this team if they're going to get anywhere.
Well, they this organization, like most, likes to take baby steps. So once Cobb had his forearm diagnosed as right forearm tendonitis, you know, they shut him down for a week. So not only are you going to have to get over the pain, but you're going to have to build yourself back up to be a starter. Smiley's doing some bullpens, but you know, I wouldn't look really for either one of them to be back until later in the month of April, that is.
It appears, sort of unofficially, technically, maybe not, I don't know. It appears that Logan Forsythe is the second baseman for the time being. Where exactly does that situation stand? Because we've got a little clarity, but it doesn't seem like a lot.
No, Kevin Cash said yesterday that Forsythe would be the, all but announcing him as the regular second baseman. Now, they do have a lot of, you know, mix and match and that kind of thing, and they're going to have to make some decisions on how many other infielders they want to take. But I would look for, until Nick Franklin came back from his oblique injury, you're going to see Forsythe out there for the most part, and the infield is going to be pretty solid with Longoria at third, Cabrera at shortstop, Forsythe at second, and Loney at first.
Forsythe's kind of an intriguing guy. I mean, he hasn't really shown it at the big league level, but at times in his career, he's really hit. I mean, do they think that maybe they might stumble onto something here?
Well, it's funny. My own experience watching him last year, he didn't have a very good start, and we were kind of wondering about this guy, you know? And then some injuries took place, and you started seeing him play a lot. And as what happens a lot of times when you see a guy play a lot and he gets some consistent at-bats, you know, you notice he's putting together some pretty hard-hit balls. And one thing I really noticed was how sure-handed he is in the field. So I don't think they're going to be lacking too much at second base with him there.
And on the other side of the diamond, Asdrubal Cabrera has emerged as the primary shortstop. That's not entirely unexpected, but did he win the job, or was that kind of the way it was looming all along?
Well, they never did say he was going to be the guy going into spring. You know, they said it was going to be one or the other, him at second or at short. And he stated at the first part of spring that he had a preference for, you know, being named one or the other. So they respected that. But he told us the other day after they made it official that, you know, he had gotten to work in the offseason. He had heard the whispers about not having his range anymore. He knows that that's his bread and butter, and he got back to work. He came to camp lighter, And according to what the Rays said, you know, he's sure-handed and his range looks pretty good.
As we stand here today, Cabrera is also batting third in the lineup in a lineup that looks maybe more than a little bit like an opening day lineup. That seems to indicate they have pretty high expectations for him with the bat as well.
I would agree. I mean, and of course, this is a team that's going to probably struggle on offense some, although I would look for this offense to be a little stronger than last year just on the merits of if Cabrera can pick up, you know, where Escobar seemed to kind of drop the ball last year, and then a catcher, you know, if Rivera can do anything like he did in San Diego, that's a major upgrade over what they've had the last 2 years at catcher.
Talking Boston Red Sox with MLB.com's Red Sox beat reporter Ian Brown. Ian, it sounds like there's suddenly a little actual worry about Koji Uehara. What exactly is his situation at the moment?
It's very interesting because, you know, a few days ago, John Farrell said that he fully expected Koji to be ready for opening day. And on that same day, Koji said, you know, this is going to be a close call. I'm not sure if I'm going to be ready. It turns out that maybe Koji was right because now John Farrell is saying, you know, we're concerned about this because he still hasn't thrown off a mound. He's been throwing long toss. So it looks like he's going to go into the last week of camp having only thrown three Grapefruit League games. So John Farrell is talking, you know, do we have him pitch three times in the last week or do we not want to do too much too soon? So right now I think there's a good chance that he starts the season on the DL.
For a guy who has a somewhat colorful health history, is it maybe more essential to make sure not to push him, to make sure that he gets his regular routine and doesn't ramp up too fast?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some thinking to that. I mean, this is a guy who turns 40, you know, at the beginning of April. And, you know, maybe in some ways it's good to save some bullets because you're going to need this guy more late in the season than early in the season, I think. So just to kind of pace him and have him get through the year so he can still close games for you late in the season.
What is plan B early in the season, both in the ninth inning, but also just if he's on the DL, that's a bullpen spot that opens up?
Yeah, John Farrell's been saying all along that plan B for saves is Edward Mujica. And Eddie actually seemed, last year he seemed more engaged when he was kind of pitching in the ninth inning. And he did pretty well when they pitched him in those save situations. So I think that as long as he's healthy at the end of camp and he's pitching well, he'll get the save opportunities. But it's going to put guys like Alexi Agondo, he's going to be put in a more prominent spot. And, you know, John Farrell was saying a few days ago that aside from Mookie Betts, he thought Alexi Agondo had been the most pleasant thing he'd seen in camp. So that's really a good sign for where they are. And the other interesting thing is Matt Barnes, their starting pitching prospect. They've kind of switched him to the bullpen during camp here. And if Koji starts the year on the DL, I think there's a real strong chance that Matt Barnes earns a spot in this bullpen, at least to start the season. You get a look at how his stuff plays up in those short inning stints.
On the more positive side, Rusnik Castillo is back, is playing. It's very early, but what have you seen from him in the limited amount of time he's been in the field?
Well, the first thing that kind of cracks me up about the whole Rusnik Castillo thing is just how reactionary people get about small sample sizes. And I'm talking mainly about fans, and they're excited. But then he comes in and he hits a home run in his first at-bat of spring training. So it's almost like you go from, oh, you know, they could just start the season with Castillo in the minor leagues to, you know, they have to find a spot for him. So, yeah, I mean, I think they are excited about Castillo. There's a reason the Red Sox made the investment in him. They did, and he's looked good coming out of the gate. So everything is encouraging with him. It's just a clear question of, you know, is there enough space for him to be on the roster? Something has got to give with this outfield. You know, right now you have six guys right now for five spots, and Hanley, Mookie, Victorino, Nava, Craig, and Castillo. One of those guys is not going to be on the team, and you know Hanley's on the team. You know Mookie's on the team. Interestingly, Daniel Nava is one guy who was guaranteed on this team because he's a left-handed hitter, and they don't have any of those, so he's a really nice fit. And now it's a matter of, you know, Shane Victorino shown you enough durability where he can start the season on the active roster, in the starting lineup, or do you maybe try to convince him, hey, Shane, maybe it's in your best interest to have a little extended spring? Alan Craig, he's swinging the bat really well. He's kind of looking a lot more like the Alan Craig of old than the guy we saw last year, which really nobody recognized. Do you put him on this team even though he's going to be a 200 at bat guy, or do you see what you can get for him with a trade? I mean, it seems to be teams everywhere looking for run producers. So, you know, what could you get maybe for Alan Craig in a trade? And then you have enough spots in your roster where both Castillo and Victorino can be on the team.
One other bat that obviously doesn't play outfield but still fits into some of these equations is David Ortiz, and I think it would have seemed absurd to think that he might not be ready for the opener recently. We're still 2 weeks away, but it's such a weird situation with this whatever physical issue is he's dealing with. Where is he at?
Yeah, David had some dehydration, and then he had, you know, they said that led to some soreness in some of his other joints, whether it's his legs or his ankles or exactly what it is. I asked John Farrell point blank if it was the Achilles that bothered him so much a couple years ago, and he said no. So, you know, David is kind of in the same boat as Koji, where he's pushing 40 years old. He's 39 right now, and you got to kind of take care of him big picture, not worry so much about the little steps. You know, right now they're saying David is going to be ready opening day, but they said that about Koji last week, so things can change. I think the key will be to see if David can get into games again starting towards the end of this week, and then if he can just sort of ramp back up. I think a lot of position players, you know, sometimes they hit a wall about halfway through camp, and then they like to really ramp it up that last week. So as long as he passes all those tests, I fully expect he'll be in Philadelphia for April 6th.
It does sound like Joe Kelly is progressing normally and nicely, but you always worry a little bit with a situation like that. Is there any reason to worry that he might not be good to go?
Joe Kelly said he was worried at first when he first felt that injury, because he did have a biceps thing before, but it wasn't quite this severe. But he was relieved the way it cleared up a few days later. So now he's pretty encouraged. But it's just a matter of, you don't want to skip any steps in spring training. You don't want to rush it and then cause another injury. So right now I think that there's a pretty decent chance Kelly starts the year in the DL. And granted, he could still be activated like the sixth game of the season. So he's only going to pitch, you know, a day or two later than he would have anyway. But they're going to just keep an eye on this. They feel pretty good now about the stable depth they have in the rotation. So they're gonna see what Kelly does when he pitches later this week and probably one more time before camp ends. And just make sure everything's right, you know, before you put him in that rotation to start the season.
But it sounds like they probably, if this goes as expected, would not need another starter. Is that correct?
Right. The Red Sox don't need a fifth starter until the sixth game of the year because they have that off day, the day after opening day. So they could bring Clay Buchholz back. Buchholz could pitch both the first and fifth game of the season, and that could line Kelly up for the sixth game of the year. So right now they're not planning on needing another starter.
All right. Well, Ian Brown, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras.